Hey everyone, this is Kate, and we got the chance at DreamHack Dallas 2023 to talk to Sean Clark, the Director of Product for CSGO over at ESL Faceit Group. We talked about the Intel Extreme Masters, the history of esports in Dallas, and a whole lot more. Thanks for listening.
So my name's Sean Clark. I am the Senior Director of the Counter-Strike ecosystem at the ESL Faceit Group. Been at the company for 10 years now, endemic to esports for 15 or so. I think I entered it when I was 15 years old and I've been helping build it ever since.
That actually goes perfectly into my first question, which was, because at the panel yesterday you mentioned coming out of esports into esports as a career in a different way, not as a player. And I did want to ask, can you talk a little bit about that trajectory out of being a competitor? Because I think that's something that a lot of folks are just now having to realize, of how do we build a life after competition?
And to be fair, that was a scary point for me too.
Yeah.
it did happen naturally though. So I was a professional player in the year, I think I went professional in the year 2005, 2006. And I remained a professional for about 4 or 5 years. I was traveling and competing very similar to players today. So a big tournament back then was the World Cyber Games. That happened once a year, basically the World Championship. And to be fair, I think there's quite a few involved in the scene today that were playing back then as well. Did that, and the first transition for me away from playing was a very natural one. In 2010, live streaming kicked off for the first time. It was the creation and the dawn of Justin TV, which then later became Twitch TV around this time. And it was also at the same time the launch of a couple of huge esport titles in StarCraft II and League of Legends. And at the time in 2010, a lot of tournament organizers were looking for someone or anyone that could do the live commentary for the esports events. And so for me, it was being English, being native, they were like, "Hey, you can speak right. You want a microphone?" And so that was the next step. So it was just playing, and then someone said, "Hey, do you reckon you can kind of do some guest speaking and do that?" And it just slowly transitioned. Initially, it was 90% playing, 10% doing commentary, and then slowly but surely that ratio flipped over until I became full time and switched to commentary. I then was a commentator in esports for another 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years. And then I transitioned to, as a commentator, I was actually working very closely with ESL. And so they were hiring me, and I even became a full-time commentator for them. And so that's kind of the next step into to get my foot through the door into having a professional career. The next step into turning it into, let's say, more of a non-player, non-commentator role was I was exposed to the broadcast a lot more as a commentator, and I could see the flaws in the show from a broadcast perspective. And so I was giving them suggestions on how to make the show better. And that's actually very similar to today. The commentators out there that work on tournaments today do that as well.
Yeah.
They obviously talk and put on the voice for everyone, but they also give advice on how to make the show better. Yeah. That's what I was doing. And that then slowly transitioned into a producer role. And so then all of a sudden you're in the third phase of evolving a career in esports. And then the final phase to kind of fast forward to where I am today is being exposed with the broadcast, you start to be exposed to the product. When you're exposed to the product, you start to see the organization behind it. Yeah. And then I got more interested into that side of the business. And that's kind of when I made the jump into the organizational side and started to build the ecosystems that we have today.
That's an amazing one. You have an amazing career.
Thank you.
It's really awesome to hear it kind of laid out as those stages, all kind of starting from that first piece of being a player. And my second question is, IEM is really large, really, really big, and they have a big impact. What are the ways that Intel and ESL are using IEM to engage more with communities, not just at the player level, but at the fan level, especially in cities like Dallas, Atlanta, San Diego? What are those community efforts like?
I mean, the community efforts are really simple because what we do and put on as a product is for the community.
Yeah.
So it's just like the very beginning of everything we do is for them. So that's kind of where it all spirals out from.
Yeah.
So that's the really easy way to look at it. What we do is essentially we build products for fans, and that's kind of the community angle straight away.
Yeah.
And then everything we do, we look at feedback, we engage with our communities, we try to evolve our products to better fit them, so that they then can, you know, continue to engage and enjoy what we do.
Kind of to go off of that, I guess for me, how much goes into, I guess, obviously the actual product of the games versus
yeah.
like the actual production and the broadcasting side? I mean, how much, I guess, is there a balance to that?
Yeah.
Like, what is more, I guess, fans found valuable, and how do you all go into, like,
yeah.
coming up with that
yeah.
type of, I guess, because like here, we're in a stadium.
Yeah.
We have lights going everywhere. It's
yeah.
like excitement.
Yeah.
I guess, is that something that you all like wanted to do, or
yeah.
is this feedback, or like, how do you guys go into like those decisions of like what the feel, I guess, should be of each event?
Yeah. I'd imagine that over the years, it's naturally evolved to the certain point where it is today. So it's not necessarily that we go to the next event saying, okay, what can we do? What do we need to do? It's almost that is the standard that we've created over a career of, I suppose, now 10 years of doing live events. At the core of everything we do, we are a sport. So that is the core. And then we build around that. And so then we're trying to create a product that entertains you. And especially at this type of event, we then go, okay, well, at the core of it, we have a competition. We have a couple of teams. So let's obviously elevate them and put them as the spotlight and ensure that they are the stars of the show. Which is how then we start to, you know, evolve our thinking. Okay, well, if they're the stars of the show, they need to be positioned in a certain way on the stage. They need the lights around them so you can see them. They need to be walking out into the crowd before they go onto the stage. So you start to kind of build from that. And then everything else you see in a stage is usually just to allow you to have a good experience. So a screen that's big enough for you to enjoy the game, which is ultimately the product we're trying to put on. The lights in there is similar to a music show, just to kind of dazzle you, I suppose,
yeah.
right? To be like, wow, this is awesome. There's flames and fire and lights. Like, so it's all a show. So I guess that answers the question a little bit more on how.
No, absolutely. Because I mean, because obviously I like watching the actual product, but I'm trying to. When we first started coming to DreamHack, she was like, "Well, why do people just watch this?" And I was like,
"That was a little nicer." I was like, "Why are you just watching this video game? I play video games.
Yeah.
Like, why are you just doing that?" And then we sat in there that first day, and by the end,
yeah.
I was screaming for Team Liquid, and
yeah.
I was like, "We're gonna win!" And he's like, "I thought you didn't like this. Shut up. This is amazing." The crowd sweeps you away, and you realize how amazing it is to see.
It does. And the thing that, like, why do you come to a live event? Like, as a fan, you can watch from home on your couch. Why do you come? And I think the reason why is because that feeling that you get when you are sharing a moment with
yeah.
thousands of other people all at the same time on something that is so nuanced, like it's a computer game and
yeah.
a competition, something so nuanced that, like, it's very rare to have the ability to share that experience with so many like-minded people.
Yeah.
So when it all comes together and something amazing happens, which, you know, it can when you have the best players in the world playing against each other, and then you share that moment, you kind of cherish that. And it's a feeling that is very difficult to describe.
Yeah.
And then obviously you get swept away in the atmosphere and the chanting and supporting
yeah.
a team. And it kind of goes back to your question on community. Like, we are bringing the Counter-Strike community here. And with the program of the Intouch Remasters is that's kind of our goal at the end of the day, is to create a flagship competition tournament on every continent.
Yeah.
And this in Dallas, North America is our home.
Yeah.
And that's where we would like to, you know, continue to build and grow. And that's our tournament here. And we have others around the world as well that are trying to achieve the very same thing.
I mean, we brought a friend, and he didn't even know what Counter-Strike was. Like, he sat down in the stadium today, or in the arena today. He was like, what game is this? Oh, this is CSGO. Okay. But we got there, and he pressed play to record a video right when Mouse won. And he was excited, and he was like, oh, I get it now. I see what's happening.
Yeah.
So it's awesome to see that with somebody else. So I did want to ask, what makes the IEM series different than other tournaments that are happening? What is really distinctive for Counter-Strike and IEM and the connection with, you know, ESL and DreamHack? What makes this unique and a unique experience?
That's a really good question. The Intel Extreme Masters is the longest professional competition on the planet. It was founded in 2007, if I'm not mistaken, and we've been running competition on different scales, obviously, ever since. It has so much history and legacy and respect to the tournament, and it's grown to the size it is today through that. And players and teams and our communities respect that and want to compete and want to engage with the product and want to experience it. And there's very few opportunities to do so. And especially when you watch it online and then you have the opportunity to come to Dallas to have that, then that's brilliant. That's what really makes us stand out, is that it really has been here since the beginning of the creation of esports and still pushing the industry forward.
I know, I think you and I think Jahidi explained on the panel that, like, there's actually a deep-rooted community of esports in Dallas that I don't think a lot of people understand or even know. Have you had experience with that before, you know, before the DreamHack?
I knew about Dallas as a city because of its roots to esports.
Yeah.
There was, I don't think Shaheen got into detail on this yesterday, there was an esports tournament circuit called, I think it's the Cybersports Pro League, Professional League, CPL was the shortened version of it. And it was a organization founded in 1997 in Dallas. And esports is not, you know, it's not been around for a long time. And 1997 is, if someone throws that year to you, especially to me, I was not in esports, and I've been in esports for a long time. I was not in esports in 1997. Very few were.
Yeah,
and so you can say that that was a birthplace of esports was here, and it also, that company hosted the very first international Counter-Strike tournament in Dallas, and it's, you know, I was speaking to the city of Dallas yesterday, and it was such a beautiful moment to be talking to them about what we're trying to build here, and they're so enthusiastic about it, and I took a moment to step back and say, like, it is awesome to be in the same room as you talking about how we're going to be building, you know, the future of esports and gaming and DreamHack here for many years to come. But it all started here at the same time. And there's just this beautiful irony about that. And they didn't know that. And then they were like, wait, what? That's incredible. And it's so that's where I first knew about Dallas. And to be fair, Dallas has hosted esports tournaments for quite a while, gaming events for quite some time as well.
QuakeCon when it was happening.
QuakeCon, there's even esports organizations that are based
here. ESL had a giant thing here, right?
I believe so, yeah. We've done events here before. I believe the company that no longer exists today in the same capacity, Major League Gaming, had done events here as well.
I feel like I can't complain about DreamHack coming to Dallas. There's been all this sweet
word of opportunities. So it's really just been a boiling pot of activities over the years of different types of events and conventions and gaming festivals.
I had a question around, and I know you had a kind of a question around this as well, the longevity of Counter-Strike and, like, what makes it different than other games? Because we see esports games kind of cycle out.
Yeah.
You know, Hearthstone is no longer big, Overwatch is, you know, floundered. Like, you see things come and go consistently in esports, but Counter-Strike is like almost like a constant.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to that longevity, either as a player or as now as your side on product?
Yeah. So for me, there are different, let's say, esports genres. You know, you've got your fighting games, you've got your first-person shooters, you've got your strategy games. For me, I thought about this a lot. The very first game that strikes through, I call an original esport. And for me, Counter-Strike is the original first-person shooter game that cannot be toppled very easily. It is an amazing, perfectly created game. And there has been so many games that have come out that have tried to rival it over the years, or even we don't even know about, that wanted to try to take it on, that never even surfaced. It's very difficult to topple an original title. And I think that thought is shared across other genres as well. And so I feel that when you look in the MOBA space, you can say that Dota and League of Legends are kind of the leading two. And they, you know, very difficult to overcome them. I feel like Rocket League has created a genre of its own. and now that's the original, even though it's relatively new. And I think in strategy games, the original there is probably StarCraft, and it's still probably the best strategy game there is out there. And so I feel like when you become that number one, it's very difficult to topple, because you need to, if you want to try to topple that game, you obviously need to make a game, but it can't be identical, so you can't copy it.
Yeah.
And it needs to be somewhat different. And at that point, you start to deviate from the beauty of the original.
Yeah.
And then people just kind of go back to what they prefer and enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I think that the level of care that Valve have, as the publisher, obviously looked after the game for so many years, the amount of esports tournaments that have continued to, you know, give the game life for many years. All these things, I think, just position Counter-Strike in such a strong and powerful position where it's been around for 20 years and it'll be around for the next 20.
I guess, kind of going to this game thing, is there any concern about any games like event? Like, because obviously we know we have the original, but do you think there any concern of like the originals falling out, I guess, or if there does something come up? I mean, I guess when it comes to game selection, because I know DreamHack over the years has changed in what they show.
Yeah, I mean, from the Counter-Strike side where I work, there is no concerns whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, Counter-Strike 2 is around the corner.
Yes. Yeah. So, I was like,
yes, it's like an incredible opportunity and positive news. Obviously, it'll be fun to integrate Counter-Strike 2, a fresh new game into the circuit, but it's exciting. And that alone is testament to the positivity and security that we feel around Counter-Strike moving forward. And then in regards to other games, there's not too much I can focus on. CS.
I do have a question, though. So if somebody hasn't played Counter-Strike, hasn't watched Counter-Strike, they're going to stumble on this interview and they're like, oh, Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
What would be your recommendation for getting into the Counter-Strike community, whether it's as a player or a fan?
Play the game.
Yeah.
Just get on it right now. Play it. That's number one, because you'll really enjoy it. And also play with friends. You know, it's not just a game you can play by yourself. You can play with others. You can meet new friends by playing it, which is, you know, even in my background, I met a lot of my friends through gaming. And also watch the tournament, engage with the community, and start to, you know, become a part of it. I think it's very easy to do so because all gaming communities are so accommodating, friendly, and welcoming that I think once you get your foot in the door, it's going to be difficult to not enjoy being a part of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's really cool.
Awesome.
I'm happy to talk with you.
Yes.